Major Andrew Fox is a former British Army officer. A very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, always a pleasure to be joining you.
It's great to chat to you as always. So, were you surprised that the UK, well, in particular being British, came out with a statement?
No, not surprised at all. I mean, since we changed from the Conservative to the Labour government in the UK, their messaging on Israel has been far less positive. They have a segment of their core electorate that they're particularly worried about and have to they're trying to shore up because they keep losing seats. This is bang on trend for how they've conducted their approach to the Gaza war since they got into power.
Do they really believe what they're saying? I mean, do they really think that Israel should stop this war and allow Hamas effectively to survive another day?
I mean, I think probably yes. I mean, the sort of pro-Palestinian cause is much stronger in left-wing parties in Europe than it is in more centre-right parties. I think they are trying to take the temperature of people in the UK, where the great silent majority don't really say anything and the sort of more extreme voices are the ones that dominate the conversation. And, you know, everything they've done since they got into power, you know, they didn't keep up the opposition to the ICC arrest warrants. Mm. They refunded UNRWA. They stopped some arms exports to Israel. But it's interesting because there's a case at the moment going through the UK Supreme Court about arms sales, where the government has made the case that Israel is following correct procedures and international law and isn't committing war crimes. So there is a sort of inherent contradiction there. But, you know, they are internationalists. They are a party that prioritizes international law above all else. And I think this statement is a reflection of that.
What do we know about the current situation or the current status of the Labour Party? We know that they had a tremendous, tremendous anti-Semitism problem, which was hardly acknowledged then it was under Corbyn. How do they fare now?
I think the issue they've got is that they lost 5 seats in the general election to Gaza candidates. So candidates who mobilised heavily Muslim electoral areas, and they were elected on the specific issue of Gaza, not on local travel, not on what their constituency needed. They were elected on Gaza, which is fairly terrifying, actually, from a national perspective. And one of the people that lost their seat was John Ashworth, who was expected to be a cabinet minister. Mm. So this was a really high-profile hit. And I think a lot of what they've done since is trying to position themselves to try and be able to win over that electorate back. For example, they staged a ludicrous PR opportunity where they tried to send 2 anti-Israel MPs to Israel, who were then promptly stopped at Ben Gurion and returned to the UK. And then there were photo ops and all sorts of nonsense off the back of that. So they are a party that does play silly games. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the anti-Semitism problem, I mean, I think it was a segment of the far left that took over the party for a while. It is very much the centre-left back in control now.
Right,
so I very much doubt they've fixed the issue with their membership, but I think in terms of Keir Starmer or David Lammy, I don't think they are anti-Semitic.
Let's talk about what is happening in Gaza in terms of humanitarian aid, in terms of what people in Gaza are enduring, which is really, really horrific. There's absolutely no doubt about what the consequence of war is, and this is a particularly brutal war. Whose responsibility is it? Where does the responsibility lie in terms of what is happening now?
We're in a classic dilemma between what is legal and what is morally correct,
right.
I think is the best way to sum up this problem, because actually Israel is on fairly steady legal standing to withhold aid for at least another few months, because we know 5 months worth of aid went in during the ceasefire period. So the food's in there. And so if Gazan people are starving, and some of them are indeed struggling to find food, the question must be asked, well, whose fault is it? And that's clearly Hamas for withholding aid, using it as a lever of control over the population. But even though it's Hamas, it's false. I think morally Israel would be deficient if they didn't step in to try and alleviate the problems that are being faced there by innocent civilians. And that's what Israel's done. And so I'm very glad to see that they've agreed to lend aid in.
Mm. And in terms of control of the distribution, because that's really the crux of where a lot of the concern is.
Yeah, so I think they've let a sort of a mercy load in, and then there is a plan for American contractors to control the distribution. And look, this has to be done in some way or another. And if the IDF don't want to take on aid distribution, then somebody else needs to do it that isn't Hamas. One of the key success factors for this war, I think, will be separating the people of Gaza from Hamas, both physically and conceptually, you know, burning their support for Hamas. And I'm tracking an awful lot of Gazan Telegram groups, and that is starting to happen. There's message after message condemning Hamas for not only starting the war, for not only failing to protect Gaza's civilians, but also for keeping the war going. And yesterday we saw the biggest protest so far on the streets of Gaza against Hamas. So that mission to kind of remove Hamas's popular support and Hamas's control over the population is as important as the military efforts to degrade their fighting capability.
So we certainly have seen that there's a significant removal of Hamas leadership in Gaza. I don't really know who's left in terms of senior leadership, but that's on the military side. What does it look like, as far as you understand, on the civil side?
Well, on the civil side, they've kept going as much as possible. We saw the Hamas police come out during the ceasefire. And, of course, there was the incident with the aid workers getting killed, where Hamas police had been involved in an earlier ambush. So we know they're trying. Last night, I think it was late last night, I tracked it, Hamas were putting out messages on their Telegram group saying, don't believe the Israelis, we're still in control. So they're panicking and flapping slightly. It's a change in tone that I'm seeing from Hamas at the moment. They are under pressure. As you say, they've had a huge attrition of their leadership. And that is going to be a problem for them. But I think that the second order effect here is that Israel needs to have a plan for what comes next. Who is going to run Gaza if and when they actually manage to remove Hamas from authority?
Adam Bowler suggests that the reason that there is, that they are close to a hostage deal, is because of the military pressure on Gaza and on Hamas at the moment. Would you agree with him on that?
Yes, I would. I would. I think that's been Israel's strategy ever since the ceasefire was enacted. I was there back in February, and they were already talking about five divisions moving into Gaza should they have to. And they've been gradually increasing the pressure through small airstrikes, big airstrikes, small ground incursions, big ground incursions. And it's a dual track. I think they're trying to force Hamas to the negotiating table on Israel's terms and get the best hostage deal that they can. And if that doesn't work, they are prepared to undertake a full-scale occupation of Gaza. So it's a, you know, I think the best solution would be if they could persuade Hamas to put down their weapons and go into exile. I think that's probably what would bring the war to a satisfactory conclusion fastest. But Israel is ready to fight on if Hamas refuses to see sense and keeps going.
Well, I was really surprised to see Israel announcing, I think, 160 terror targets in Gaza. That's still an enormous amount.
There is, but you have to remember that there's areas of Gaza that have been untouched during the war, and Israel hasn't fought into them. And the main reason for that is because it's been where the hostages have been. They've been tracking the locations of the hostages throughout this conflict. The vast majority of them, they have a relatively good idea where they are. And they have had a no-strike policy where they know hostages are present. And so, for example, the Central Camps Battalion are almost untouched of Hamas. So there are huge amounts of areas of Hamas still to strike. Efforts previously have focused on military commanders. Since the end of the ceasefire, we've seen them hitting administrators as well. So there's still plenty of targets to hit if Hamas don't bring this war to a conclusion.